So we're gonna now we're gonna go on to another topic. This one really bugs a lot of people. This one kind of bugs me a little bit. I'm in Israel and just about ready to go home. I had a good time. We studied karate over there, and I had my bags packed. I'm drinking coffee. There's this guy named Amir.
Peter, you will enjoy the good coffee that we have here in Israel. He thinks of himself as American. He says, they really think I'm American. I actually have a name. It's an American name. It's Mark Ashley. A policeman pulled me over, and I told him I was American. He believed me and let me go.
So I'm sitting at his house, and I notice I got a cell phone message, because you get those cell phones that are pretty cheap. You could call America. Three messages. Peter, it's Russell. Call me immediately. That's weird. It's 4 in the morning in New Jersey. Starting to get a little like freaked out. Next. Peter, it's Russell again. Call me as soon as you get this message. And I bought Amir a plate, you know. An orange, one of those nice Israeli art. When Israeli art is bad, it's really bad. But that when it's good, it's great. Got him a nice plate.
Peter, my wife enjoys this plate so much. She wanted to serve with it, but I wanted to be an art piece.
All right, Amir, just give me a break.
Shalom, זה אל על איירליינס, תלצל את ההורים שלך במנסות עכשיו.
LL Airlines, call your parents. My dad's been dead for 20 years. Call your parents in Minnesota immediately. What the?
Peter, you know how it kind of gets into dream mode? Peter, the plate.
I'm holding the cell phone, but my wife can see what Amir can't see. Some shit is going down. I'm getting all sweaty. I say, Amir, I dial in my brother-in-law Russell's number, 1201-967-1369, and all you can do is like, dude, your gateway to tragedy. I say to Amir, enough with the plate. There's some shit going on down. I must sit and call this number. My wife is freaking out, like already.
Hi, my sister answered the phone. Peter, Susie died in a car accident. My sister, this summer. Okay, I say. I'll call you back later.
You get official, you try to take care of business. So, without any further ado, because the question is on my mind, why do bad things happen to good people? I don't like that exactly. Do you suppose that God cries? That's my question.
And the second half of that story is you had called me from the airport. And thank God I've been blessed that I haven't had firsthand and bli ayin hara a personal tragedy of this caliber. I say that because all the knowledge you have and all the wisdom and all that you've been trained to know and to speak and to communicate really is absolutely meaningless at a time like that. There's a story about this rabbi, a great scholar who was in Russia, and he was well respected, he was loved, a man of many colors and many blessings, but tragedy struck. Without getting into details, his entire family, everything that was dear to him was all wiped away. It was a mishap. It was a mishap on a boat that capsized. And when the news came to town, nobody wanted to, who's going to volunteer to tell this to him? Besides that, he was so loved and respected in general, no one wants to carry such news. It's a true story. Finally, so to speak, the lucky quote-unquote one was his favorite student. They said, listen, you're his student, you have to share it with him. And he's running around, you know, procrastinating and buying time. What is he supposed to say? What's he going to say? So he goes into the Beis Medrash, which is the yeshiva where they're studying. And he sees the Rosh Yeshiva, his teacher, is standing by the table. And he goes over, Rabbi, Rebbe, I'm struggling with a difficult passage in the Talmud. And the passage in the Talmud is in the Masechta Brachos, the first tractate called Brachot. It says that just as you have to bless God for the gifts in your life, you also have to bless God for, God forbid, the klalot, the curses, the tragedies in your life. He says to the rabbi, tell me, how could you equate the two? I understand that we have to acknowledge it, we have to live through it, but how could you equate, how could the Talmud equate a blessing and a tragedy? Dancing at your daughter's wedding with, God forbid, absolute tragedy, I don't even want to mention an example. So the rabbi, who is brilliant, goes into a long dissertation explaining that no pain, no gain, through the descent you reach a higher ascent, and he goes into the whole story that through breaking things, through tragedies, at the moment it's painful, but it opens up new opportunities, new growth, whatever. The student obviously not buying it. He says to him, but still. So the rabbi goes into the next slew of arguments, that we don't understand God's ways, and this is a challenge to open up our horizons. And I'm not going to go through, I'm sure he went through every answer that you've ever heard in every book and every shritas, whatever. And the student will not let go. This is his way of obviously approaching the subject. And he says to the rabbi, but please, tell me, it's still, how could you equate the two? All nice explanations. So the rabbi says, listen, it's true, it's hard to understand, but the fact is, that's what the Talmud says. If you're a godly person, you understand that there's a deeper picture, there's a bigger picture, and the two are just two sides of God's experience. One is, are you telling me that you have to dance when something tragic happens, just as if it was the wedding of your child? He says, I know it sounds impossible, but ultimately, your attitude has to be the same. So now the student says to the rabbi, Rabbi, you could start dancing. And he told him what happened. Well, what do you think happened? The rabbi didn't dance. He fainted. And when they finally revived him, the rabbi says to the student, suddenly I don't understand this Talmud at all. That's what he said. This is, my mind captures the essence of Moses. Was a man who was wiser than anyone. Even wiser than King Solomon, by the way. The one who spoke to God face to face. Heard about all the mysteries of life and death. Yet when it came to tragedy, particularly the tragedy of death, the Talmud, the Mishnah Medrash says, and the Talmud says, that he was able to understand all the mysteries of purity and impurity, except when he saw the tragedy of death. Tumat mes, the impurity or the tragedy or the spiritual dissonance of death, it says Moshe became dark. This is the expression. His face became ashen. He began trembling. And he turned to God and said, how can we ever purify from this? How can we ever heal from death? So, when one chassid came to a Rebbe with a great tragedy in his life, the Rebbe said to him, I don't have answers for you, but I can cry with you. To me, and I've been, all the years I've traveled and spoken and discussed, this topic really deserves silence. However, If you're silent, people won't know what you mean. So you have to say something in words that is the equivalent of silence. Not silence out of weakness, or silence because we have nothing to say, but silence out of awe. There's an expression about the Holocaust survivors that is used by tzaddikim, and the truth of any survivor of true tragedy, senseless tragedy, that the survivor is called a od mutzel me'esh, a burning ember. You see a building burned down, besides the tragedy of the building that burned down, is, you know, you look at the embers that are still smoking and still charred and black, but they remained. We don't have answers to this question, period. And that itself has to be stated unequivocally, and that is in respect of the mystery of life and death. Somebody gets up and tries to wax eloquent and discuss and explain. Not only is it arrogant, it's stupidity, it's vulgar, it's an abuse of the loss. It's abuse of God's mysterious ways. Now I know this is the big question everyone says, that if I could understand how bad things can happen to good people, how a good God could allow such senseless pain, I would believe in God. I say unequivocally that's baloney. If people have a problem with believing in God, it's not because there's pain in this world. It's because they don't like responsibility. But that's another discussion. It's a great excuse. I remember, I'll never forget, at one talk I gave, it was a panel discussion. It was about the topic of pain and suffering. And on the panel was a Holocaust survivor. And some arrogant little philosopher, major in philosophy in some university in the United States, gets up and starts going on and on about, you know, huge religious Jews, you know, completely oblivious of pain and suffering. What kind of God, after you heard what happened to 6 million? Anyway, the Holocaust survivor slowly stood up, as we sit here, and he unrolled his sleeve, and he showed him his number, and he said, "How old are you?" 25 years old. He said, "What tragedy did you experience that you can tell me about your loss of faith exactly? What chutzpah do you have to stand here? Are you going to tell me that I lost my entire family and I still believe in God? You're telling me that what, that I'm a fool?" Now, I don't know what this guy was thinking, but you know, of course his pride couldn't accept it. And he started like smirking to his friends, you know. But it was pretty obvious what happened. We have no right to enter into the sacred place when a person suffers. And I speak now personally to you, Peter, and to anyone that has had any loss of that nature. It's sacred. It's between you and God. If it causes you to challenge God and challenge your faith in God, that's just as sacred as if it causes you to have deeper faith. We don't enter there. It's the Holy of Holies. It's the mysteries. It's the mystery of life and death. But one of the most powerful things, that when Job, the classic sufferer Job, you know, in Crown Heights we have a rabbi, I don't want to mention the name, but he's like a living Job. You should see his life story. Children died, his wife. I mean, I've seen it with my own eyes. So Job says to God, after everything is said and done, he says to him, "Why?" And what God answers him, I think, God says to Job, I'm paraphrasing, he says, "Were you there when you asked me this question, why? In other words, why such loss, why such pain? Why such senseless agony? Were you there," God says to Job, "when I created it all, when I created heaven and earth, that you asked me this question?" Now, when I read it the first time, I thought, you know, what is that? What is he saying exactly? I mean, he's pulling rank, basically saying, like, you can't understand it because I'm the creator and you're just a creature. But then I realized, no, God was giving him the deepest and most real answer possible. God was saying, "You ask me why there's death. Do you ask me why there's birth? You ask me why there's pain. Do you ask me why there's joy? You ask me why there's suffering, but do you ask me why there's life?" We don't ask why we're born. We don't ask why we're happy. We don't ask why we're alive, because that's a given. We take it for granted. And maybe that's good. When things don't work, we suddenly ask. That doesn't mean the question is illegitimate. But God is saying to him, the mystery of death is directly connected to the mystery of birth. And the mystery of suffering is directly connected to life. Because if there was no life, there'd be no suffering. And if there was no birth, there'd be no death. So I think, in trying to sum up the Jewish approach, it's a paradox. On one hand, it's silence, sacred, no words. We don't understand the Talmud. Yet at the same time, that is not resignation or surrender. It's a way of embracing the dark side of the moon, the dark side of existence, which is intricately bound to the side of light in ways we should never know, and we don't, and hopefully we will never know. But when you lose a sister like that, and when I heard about it, besides, you know, as friends, and I'm just coming back from Israel this morning, by the way, so I saw firsthand what's going on in a place like that. And all of us, I mean, you hear the news, things happen. I think what Jews learned over the thousands of years of our history is that we may never know why, but one thing for sure, we never fold and we never give up. We may not know why, but we know what we have to do. And that's the question, what do you do? I remember a man who lost his wife at a young age with 10, 11 children, no question. He was asked, how did he survive? And he said, I had two options. Either I sink or I dig deeper. And I wasn't ready to sink. I see many people who sink. You see people come out of tragedies, and the tragedy is manifold and double and triple in their lives, a second Holocaust. Ultimately, the only answer is that you have to reach a deeper place. And this is not something that happens overnight. It has to grow. You may never know why, but you know one thing, that you can become stronger and that you can teach that strength to others as well. And yes, God does cry. So someone will say, well, if God's crying, hey, why doesn't he stop us crying and let him stop crying? Well, it's part of the mystery of existence. But to say that God is not there, my brother wrote a beautiful article, I mean, you can call it beautiful, but it's about this topic a few weeks ago, that God is there with us. There's no question about it. Is that a consolation? Yes, it is. Because the loneliness of pain is worse than the pain itself. That's what I say to you.